Jump around cause you're feeling happy and wave you one up in the party and want if you know some house money ready and from the microphone you know me feeling sexy and what if I girls you know them love mousy and shot me shot cause you know
Moin, Moin, Con. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yeah. Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
We're
all good, so.
He's wanna hear me.
He's gone a bit lower though.
Yeah, Moin's a bit lower.
No, there, now we are back up.
Am I? Yeah.
Sort.
Yeah, fuck it. Just go for it.
Yeah.
We're not fucking technical masters.
Thanks very much.
Yeah, for this. We're not fucking technical masters. We just go with the flow. All we do is just
far
rock
from
up.
It.
Oh, we wish
rock
we was.
Rock up and have a
mean?
Chat and that's it.
Well, yeah. I'm not a very technical person, so yeah. I enjoy that swell, yeah? I'm not a very technical I'm not big on social media. I'm big on, when he started to use a laptop for the first time about 2 months ago.
Seriously?
Yeah, I swear to God.
Like, how are you able to like deal with clients and all and give them programmes and shit like that?
Right, you were all true. Like, if I'm doing programmes, I do it all through, just writing it down, and then I'll type it out, like, do you know what I mean? But I don't run through a platform or anything like that. I sit down with clients and stuff.
Yeah, you approach them in person, yeah?
Yeah. And that's how I do it, yeah.
You find that easier?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah,
sitting and speaking with somebody, like, don't get me wrong, online coaching, like, stuff like that is definitely the way to go. My own online coach that I used to train with, like, he makes a serious, a good living for me, you know, but... Like, for me, I think I just have this big bleeding wall up against it. You know what I mean? Yeah. I don't know how to do it. But when realistically, I should really just, you know, sit down and...
Try it.
Yeah. You know what I mean? And stop. I think anybody, if you put the amount of energy you do, like, I enjoy training, I enjoy playing football and enjoy doing other things. If I put that same energy into setting up an online profile, 100% I'm going to get there.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I just don't want to... divert my energy into something like that. And that's
just what basically stops me. Yeah, of course. And my coach was the same, like Sam Shortle.
Well, I know of Sam. I don't
know him, but
I just
he made
know
a serious living out of it as well. Yeah, you know what I mean? His business is flying now. Like.
It definitely is. Like the same as if you look at like Alan. Do you know Alan, aka the Method Man? That's his name. I don't know what second name. I can't remember his second name, but the lad that owns the gym I train in, that's his coach now. He wouldn't be massive online as in like... He wouldn't do
followers wise or anything. Yeah,
he'd have a bit of a following, but he's not like a mad Instagram or anything.
Yeah,
he knows his shit, and he's made a serious living off it as well. You know, set up his own gym and kitted it out and everything, which is brilliant.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Stop. That's the dream, innit? That's the dream. Have your own gym. Like a franchise opening around Dublin. That's definitely my dream.
I think anybody that trained in the gym had that dream at one stage though, you know what I mean?
I think
if you got serious about training, because when I was serious about training, that was always like get into personal training, start coaching people and then own my own gym.
I think just having a place where somebody, for me, it's like, I think people's ideas of owning their own gyms is more so that creating a space that people can walk into and be like, this is the fucking best place ever. You know, that kind of way. And they're either leaving with a better head than he had walking in, or, you know, you're watching people transform over the space of 6 or 8 months, or it could be lifting a weight for the first time, like a different type of weight. So all of those different experiences in
all
a place that you own.
Yeah.
I think that's where people get it's not just owning your own gym. It's not just a business. Like,
yeah, of
you
course.
Know? I think gym owners, like... Right, you have your fly fits and all, and they're, for me, you know, they're commercial, and they're great for pricing and stuff, but the likes of the lads, like even the two lads, the lad and the girl that own the gym I train in, Nicola and Shane, you know, they create a space for people in the community that is, it's outstanding, like, you know, and people love going, and they get that, and it's great buzz for them.
And in such a toxic environment, isn't it? Like the gym culture, it's so toxic. So that is for people to have a positive experience, that's what you want the most, isn't it?
Yeah, like, that's what I love. Like a family, not a family, community based gym. Do you know what I mean? Where everyone knows everyone. Like the gym,
local business.
The gym.
Derek Bonet has one in Summerhill as well. Do you know Derek Bonet?
No,
never heard of him. He has his own gym now as well. Like that, it's just a positive place for the whole community to go and train.
Yeah, I like the way you turned around there and said it's a toxic place. I think for me, like obviously I've been around a little bit of weightlifting now. It's what am I now? I shouldn't give me away my age. Well, since about 25, I probably started kind of going into gyms and stuff like that. And for me, I think the gym is kind of whatever you make it, whatever you want it to be. You know, it has got that toxic element. You know, there is certain people, you know, that would it's more for influence stuff and followers and, yeah, and I suppose an image, and they just want to go around thinking they're the best thing since sliced bread. But if you look outside in the world, I suppose everybody has different types of egos, and you can have a perspective on anybody. Yeah. For me, the gym, I can see it happening. Do I pay attention to it? Absolutely not.
Yeah.
You know, so
yeah,
I don't get any toxic from it, but I definitely see where you're coming from.
Yeah.
There's definitely that element to it. And yeah, I suppose somebody going in first would have that nervousness, yeah, and that anxiousness about them, because they probably...
And it's online as well, because a lot of it is online. Like, you see people record and say they're set online, and someone walks by and, like, they'll post it on Instagram being like, what's he think he's doing? Yeah. And like, it's like,
yeah, like he's
seriously, like, who said you want that space in the first place? You know what I mean? Like,
come here, I tell you something. Yeah, gym etiquette, right? In gym etiquette, anybody going to get away has... gym etiquette over you recording. Yeah. I don't care who you are, what you're doing.
Yeah.
Recording in the gym doesn't come first.
No.
Wherever you need to go.
Exactly.
Now, if you were deadlifting a massive set, walking behind somebody while they're not just about to lift a big set is probably...
Yeah, it can be annoying, yeah. And especially if you have got a gym presence online, yeah, I suppose it can be. But, like, you just... I watch a bloke, Joey Swall, I don't know if you heard of him. He's a big bodybuilder, but he calls out gym culture everywhere.
Right.
So, like, many of videos, you know, someone will walk by and he's like, who do you think you are? You don't own this space and all. Like, that's a walkway.
Yeah.
Like, the moaning that people are walking in their shot, not even in their way, in their shot, and they're in the walkway of the gym. Where's he supposed to walk?
Yeah,
what,
yeah,
see your phone? Oh, no, hang on a minute. Better go around
it.
No, me bollocks. I'm focused on my workout when I'm in the gym, you know what I mean? And just my workout. I couldn't give a bollocks what's going on around me. Like yourself, you're just focused in the zone. But
exactly. The world doesn't revolve around them people. No. Their egos are just way too big. They just...
I know, I can understand why you didn't go near social media because of all of this, you know what I mean? It can be so toxic as well.
Not only that, when we talk about toxic gym cultures, like people recording other people, it's so annoying, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, we talked about that Mildrick video, the Chelsea player. He fucking recorded some fella fucking...
His ass was showing.
He was fucking recording and put it on his fucking Instagram.
Or they'd pull up old men training, you know, doing certain exercises and be like, hey, what do they think they're doing and all? Or what's he training for?
But
like,
I think that's just an internal problem for the person that's putting the video up. It's
Careful.
Like, how pathetic is your life that you have to go
on? I would say this all the time. In any space, it's that toxicity is from... your internal, it's everything.
It's
you're projecting what you're feeling towards other people so that they feel like you do.
Yeah, or
you know what I mean?
You know, you're just trying to make your own kind of pathetic... well, I'm not going to say pathetic life, but your own kind of... you're going to try, you're going to just try and make yourself feel that little bit better, in order to belittle somebody that little bit low. And for me, anybody, you have that trait in yourself, like. It's not a nice trait to have, you know. It definitely isn't. I'd definitely be staying away from people like that. I just, you know, I just don't pay attention to it. I really don't.
And you're better off,
It goes over my head. I think if you're content in yourself and what you do in your life...
nothing else matters, really, does it?
It just doesn't bother me. I don't see it happening, you know. I can see in my peripheral, but it doesn't take me peace of mind.
Of course,
all.
None
whatsoever, you know.
You were saying that... excuse me, you started training at 25. Did Anton stop you from training before that, or just that's when you really got into it?
So we could go all the way back here, you know. So, obviously when I was a kid, I was very sporty, you know. Very, very sporty. I picked up football at a very, very early age. I played sports my whole life. It was actually a young flat across the road that he used to play football, and that's how I started playing, you know. And then obviously in school I would have done all the sports to get out of school. It was a nightmare in school. So I would have done all the sports just to get out of school. I was very good. I was a very good sprinter. Would have went to Sandringham and all. And then obviously what got me into the gym at 25 was I gave up football and all that at a very early age. So I gave up at about 19 or 20. I can't put the stamp exactly what age I left at. And then obviously a few years went by, and you know, I was in a relationship with a bloke and we were together for a long time, and you know, when you get into relationships and you start kind of buying houses and stuff like that, the weight started kind of going on. I was working in the airport at the time and I was doing 12-hour shifts, and I remember I was with one of the lads I was working with, and the big Emirates, you know, the big weighing scales where they're down the end for the big oversized bags, and I grew up on it, and I was fucking over 74-75 kilos or something. Now, it wasn't 74-75 kilos of muscle or anything, it was pure just
fat.
Yeah, pure fat. Like, I was like, and I'd kind of known I'd had to let myself go an awful lot, and I was like, Jesus Christ. And then from then, I just kind of made the decision. I was like, I'd done a bit of training here and there, and as I said, I'd always been into sports and stuff like that. But I started going to the gym, I started doing PTs, and in mind, over matter, it was Kulak Training Young at the time. And from then I just really started kind of getting into the gym a lot more. So probably about 2 years of kind of doing, you know, 6 week challenges, if you want to call them that, and PTs here and there. And then I really kind of started to grow in it, you know, and started to love it, started to actually do weightlifting, you know.
Yeah. And what type of training is it now you're doing?
Jesus. I was telling you here earlier that I'm actually training to do a bit of long distance running. So we started that when the air season finished in November last year. I said to myself, right, I'm going to do something that's going to, first of all, I'd never done before. I'd never felt comfortable doing before, which was long distance running. I'm a sprinter. I'm not
just the thought
for
of it alone turns you off, doesn't it? Like, thinking about, like, because you know, it's, say you tell you're doing 20k, you're out for 3-4 hours. Easy, probably more.
Yeah.
And the thought of being on a road, moving your body for that long time.
Well, like, so I've tried, like, you know, I've done a few 5k's and 10k's over lockdown, as you're saying. Yeah. And, you know, I never enjoyed running. So I said to myself, I'm going to do something that's going to put me outside my comfort zone. So, you know, I got in touch with my coach now, it's Mark Fleming, you know, and I put the, if you want to say, the challenge to him, like, you know, can you bring me through this? So at the moment now I'm training, I'm actually only doing a 10-miler. I'm supposed to do a half marathon, but when I went to book, it was booked out.
Yeah.
So we had to resort to the 10-miler, yeah. Yeah, so I'm training for that at the minute. And then obviously we're full on in pre-season right now. Which is starting to get heavy. So my weight training at the minute has actually took, I'm lucky to get 2 or 3 days in. And the way my split kind of works, obviously I have to try and work it around, you know, what kind of days. If I'm doing an aerobic run on that day, I could probably do a bit of weight training. If it's a hard day, the office with shells, I'd probably drop that day, you know. I'm finding it kind of a little bit difficult to fit in 2 or 3 days, but it'll be a full body split.
Yeah.
At the minute, full body weight session if I can.
And just mostly cardio then, isn't it?
And then mostly cardio, which is strange for me, because, you know, weightlifting is such a big part of, for me, for the last how many years, you know, 10 years, let's say.
Yeah.
8-10 years around that. So, yeah, I do. It's hard to kind of pull back off it, to be totally honest with you. I am finding it hard. I see my legs shrinking and my head is gone.
That's where my struggle came is when I start to see the weight drop off. So how do I keep this on?
The
muscle,
it's
the nearly
muscle
impossible.
Is, the muscle drops a little.
I'm just growing, I'm just getting bigger.
The Hulk.
Turning into He-Man where he's turning to play.
Where
the machinist?
Man,
heard of the machinist, Christian Bale.
Oh yeah.
He's not doing it to that. I'm just coming here, man.
I'm finding a little bit hard to mix the days up and, you know, get my strength sessions in. But when this race is finished, when I'm in season with shells, it's normally run over 3, maybe 4 days. I probably lift a little bit too heavy while I'm in season. Girls have often told me that as well. You know, you need to just watch yourself. I find it hard sometimes when I go into the gym and I know I have a bit more to try and pull a little bit back. Yeah.
But isn't it good to build strength just so, like,
oh, absolutely,
you can bully the defenders, that sort of stuff?
Well, you know, for me,
oh, like, they wouldn't push you off the ball so easily.
Yeah, well, like, you know, we don't have many attributes when it comes to football. I'm not a very good footballer, you know. I'm not. Let's call it spade
a spade. I'm just a professional, but I'm not that good.
No. We call it spade a spade. I'm not the best with the ball at my feet, you know.
Oh, goal scorer, look at Haaland. He's a good footballer.
Yeah.
He's a goal scorer.
But if I have any kind of attributes, you know, my strength and my speed would be two. And I think it's very important, especially for the younger girls now, to realise that, you know, strength training is something that you need to bring into your game. And any professional athlete or any kind of elite or high level athlete, if you were a runner, like, you know, if you had went back 20, 30 years ago, it was probably unheard of for runners to be weight training.
Oh,
every
yeah.
single
yeah.
runner now, or Ironman or a triathlete or anything, have some sort of strength training. Yeah. You know, you need to strengthen the muscles up in order to prevent injury. Like, it's more injury prevention than anything. And especially for our younger girls, we always try it. Now we have gym sessions, you know, in where we're training at the minute. But I think it's so important for girls to understand that, you know, how beneficial strength training is for them and how much it's going to help them along the way. And as you said, you know, you build strength, and it's not very easy for girls to push you off the ball. And you know, it's a great attribute to have when you're on a pitch.
No. Yeah, see how you said you left football early at 19 or 20. What made you leave football?
Oh, God.
We'll bring it back to the start.
So, you know, playing football, when I was playing, so we would have started off playing with the boys. So we played with St. Columbus, was my first team. It was actually a very good side.
Yeah, I know them very well, yeah.
So we were a very good side growing up.
Yeah. Jerry played with them, Jerry Redmond,
yeah. Yeah, so he would have been a couple of years older than me, I think. But we had a great side. We would have played against the likes of Paddy Madden and stuff like that for Home Farm. And I remember we won the All-Ireland, I think it was, back in under-14s. It was fantastic. But, you know, at that time, there wasn't many girls playing football. There really wasn't. Like, I would have got an awful time growing up, you know, with, like, you shouldn't be playing or whatever the case may be. And I spoke about this at a meeting we had with the Dáil. We had a meeting with the Dáil, the League of Ireland, a couple of us last year, and we were just speaking about women's football and what kind of needs to develop. And a thing clicked in my head that I completely forgot about. Like, when I went to primary school, we weren't allowed out to the football yard. Girls weren't allowed. You know, so there was me and my best friend at the time, like, we're fantastic footballers and better than all the lads.
Allowed to play.
And we weren't, but we eventually got the rule changed. So we were only allowed out, there was only me and her allowed out at the start.
Yeah.
And then the year later then
they were allowed to join.
Yeah, so, like, that's not that long ago, you know, it was mental.
No.
Like, and my first women's team was Stellamaris. It was actually Noah King that brought me up to Stellamaris, and we played with a fantastic team from under 16s to under 18s to, I think we went senior. I'm not even too sure whether I was senior at the time before I'd left. I think I was, yeah. And we had great players, you know. We played with Anya Gorman, Stephanie Roach, Susan Hackett at the time. She was amazing, what a player. And, you know, Amy Ryan. We'd all these great girls that were playing football. And for me to go up and see a girls' team, like, this was amazing.
Unbelievable. Yeah,
this was like, man, girls actually play football, you know? And playing for Stellamaris at that time, like, you looked around you, like, there was an under 16s lads team there. They were excellent now, don't get me wrong, they were an excellent side, but, you know, the treatment they were getting and I suppose the coaching and just the overall of the lads that were involved with the club just got an awful lot more, and there was an awful lot more direction and pathways
for the men rather than
the girls, you know. That wasn't, you know, playing for your country was probably the only kind of thing, and I'm not saying the only thing, like, obviously,
no, of course
that is
not, but
massive,
no,
to play for,
yeah,
your, for
yeah.
your country. But there wasn't an emphasis, or there wasn't, like, you know, this is where you can get to, or this is where you can grow to, you know.
Yeah.
Now, I'll have to be honest, there was a lot of it on me as well. I was, as I said, like, in school and all, I was a bit of a night. I was a wild kid, you know. I was absolutely wild.
Yeah.
You know, I would have smoked years ago when I was a kid. And, you know, drinking was a big thing for me. And it was losing interest. And there was no leadership, or there was no what, like what we have today. There was no you know, somebody just to pick you up and grab you and tell you, like, you've somewhere to go, there's a direction, there's a path here for you to go, you know. And there wasn't much of that support around. So leading up until I was 19 and 20, I just lost interest, complete interest in it. I didn't want to play anymore. Drinking and smoking and going to college. I'd left school and I went to outdoor adventure management, Shackleton course in Clochdoul, the same school I I was in, and I started doing water sports at the time, you know, yeah. Like sailing and windsurfing and all this sort of stuff. That was completely opened up my mind to a whole new world out there. And I kind of just went down that road rather than football. And yeah, I just stopped playing. Just completely stopped. Stopped watching it. Stopped everything.
Yeah.
That was just the end of it from there, you know.
Yeah, and going back to what you said about football and how you feel like you are being mistreated compared to the boys. No, I don't really condone sessioning, but
in sessions,
like, you get this false perception when you're with people, because obviously you're fucking locked and whatever, you're on drink, you're on drugs, you're on whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
You feel like you belong, you know what I mean? Like, people are showing respect that you didn't get back at football. Would that be another factor into why you got more into session and less into football?
I would say more so, again, bringing it back to what we were talking about at the start, internally growing up, I didn't really understand who I was, and obviously I was I would have done a lot of things in order to fit in, you know, an awful lot of things in order to fit in. I wore masks for different people to, you know, because I craved that, I suppose, that acceptance off of everybody. And you know, when I drank, I became very comfortable in my own skin, that kind of way, and I became a part, and I could build the ego up.
Yeah,
I don't need football, you know what I mean? I don't need football. Sure, that's sure. Anyways, I want to go off and do different things.
Yeah.
You know, so I would have developed an ego around drink and stuff like that, and I suppose I could be myself. You know, I felt like I could be myself.
That's when you were only yourself, is when you had the drink.
Exactly. Yeah. Why does that happen? Because, you know, we become in the moment then. You know, we don't worry about the outside things anymore. You know, we don't have to worry about what other people are thinking about us. You know, we become directly in that moment, and that's what attracted to me. And I loved the session, you know. I loved partying. I loved going out. I loved dancing. I loved, you know, I loved being the centre of attention. That's just, you know, that kind
of way. That was like myself. Now, I was shy. I didn't really talk to people. Growing up, I wouldn't have talked to many people. Then when I started sessioning, that's when I'd start talking to everybody.
Yeah.
I was controlling conversations, you know what I mean? Yeah. Just when I was doing that, though. And then when I'd go home, be like, didn't want to leave the house.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So that further pushes you into a dark place then.
It gives you a false perception, really, you know? Yeah. It gives you a false perception. But, you know, as I said, as a kid, you know, I wasn't really accepted as the person I was. So I did develop a big ego from a very young age, you know, and I was very afraid to show weakness, you know, very afraid to show weakness, because if that was the case, it means that I become less important.
Yeah, and would the area play a part in that as well?
Come here. I suppose, like, I'm not one to kind of put blame on certain things, but it definitely has.
Oh, plays its part.
It definitely plays its part. Environment definitely plays its part. And you know, when you're younger and you're going around and you see the big lads and the gangsters or whatever it is, you know, everybody getting respect, and that's all you kind of want. Like, you're just craving fellowship.
It's glorified, isn't it, when you're looking at it from that age? It's like, glorified. Oh, you have to be like that. Like, that's it.
Yeah. Well, I need to be respected because. Yeah. You know, I don't know how to respect myself.
Yeah.
And that's what the biggest problem is. Yeah. You know, people don't understand how to be themselves, or they don't know how to be content as their own self, as their own person. So they'll reach externally as much as they possibly can to grab the fill, your hole that's going on inside you.
Yeah, that's a perfect way to put that.
Do you know, and for me, I suppose the external stuff, looking at these whatever gangsters, or whatever it was, you know, they had everything. They had it all, you know.
And
I just want to be a part of that, you know.
Never worked a day, walked around the best of gear, money constantly, you know what I mean?
And do you know what? Like, look, for me, it was just, you know, just being a part of. I suppose the nice things would have gave me a little bit of an attraction, but it was more than being a part of and being respected.
Being respected more, you know? So, yeah.
Yeah, and just wanting to be
accepted.
That was definitely the biggest part for me. You know, so I played a big toll for me growing up.
So what dragged you back in then to football?
What dragged me back into football? That's a good question. So going through my 20s, as I said, I was in a very serious relationship, and you know, we ended up buying a house and all together, and you know, drinking and stuff was still a big part. And my best friend, she played for a local team. My best friend Natalie Wall, she played for Dunnycarney, you know, and she always said it to me, you know, I need to go back playing football. And I'm like, I couldn't be arsed. You know, I'm just not into it anymore. She's like, you should, you'd love it. You know,
actually, sorry for interrupting you. Did you hate football at this stage?
No, I never hated it. To be honest, I'm going to put out, I don't think I hate anything. I think hate's a very, very strong word. I think you need to kind of use it a little bit carefully. No, we never hate it.
Too much energy to hate something, doesn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. It takes your peace of mind and nothing in this world is worse than your peace of mind. But no, I didn't hate it. I suppose maybe I had a little bit of resentment against it. That would be more the word. And it was more just a resentment with myself because I didn't continue playing and I blamed everybody else for it.
Do you feel like that happens often with young girls though? Because of what they're saying, like the pathway is for men compared to them, like they kind
back
of
in
fall
the day
out.
Or
yeah,
now?
Yeah. Back in, I know it's kind of growing now, but back in the day, like you said, there wouldn't have been a pathway for young girls to go into football.
Even for Ireland, they still get mistreated and stuff like that.
Yeah, they do. Like,
wasn't there something they done a protest, something like that? I remember,
it was a few years ago,
like 2010 or something.
Yeah, no, it has all changed since then. So a lot of the senior girls had to get together and they were getting hand-me-down tracksuits and all this sort of stuff, you know. And now they all stuck together and that has all changed. Yeah. Now it's on a high professional level. But to bring it back to your last kind of thing for younger girls, like especially when I was growing up, the pathway was definitely a big issue. Mm. But there was also... there was also 15 and 16 years of age. Like for girls, they want lads to be, you know, attracted to them and obviously at the time football wasn't the thing. Now it's different. Like lads are actually attracted to women that lift weights and attracted to women that play sport and stuff like that. But back then it wasn't. It was weird, like for girls. So you had that. You had, you know, and you were afraid of what people were going to say about them. And then it was obviously, you know, there was different interests. They would have had different interests and then drinking was definitely another one for girls. So, and then there's no one to grab onto them and be like, no, if you just go down this road, you know, there's a way, or there's, you know, you can enjoy, not necessarily to make all the money in the world, but to go and play into
and enjoy your
football. Yeah. But that would have been a lot to do with why girls didn't stick around, you know.
It is sad though. But the look on women's game still from a lot of people is a bad perception, isn't it?
I think
I know it's grown a lot in the last few years and it's brilliant to see, but there still is that bad perception in there for whatever reasons. I don't know, but
I just think again it's just gonna take time. I think everything takes time, like, you know. It will take a little bit of time of growth and the only way we can go forward is do what we're doing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
To do what we're doing. Like you look at the Ireland girl team now after the World Cup, come on playing Nations League, you know, playing Northern Ireland and nearly selling out the Aviva, you know.
Yeah.
It is going in one direction, but like you're never gonna please everybody.
No.
You're always going to have haters and you're always going to have people having bad perceptions on things and you just have to choose to take it and just keep going in the right direction and not letting anybody stand in your way, basically, you know. Don't be letting other people's opinions be a result of what you decide to do.
Yeah.
You're in charge of your thoughts. You're in charge of how you react to things. Yeah. You don't necessarily have to go off of in hindsight, what people think of me or what people think of my club, I think of women's football, it's not my business.
No.
I wouldn't have got
to where you are today had you been worried about people's opinions.
Absolutely. If I go back when I was 16, when I was 18 or 20 when I left, I was worried about women's opinions.
And
well,
you'd have never gone back to it,
today I'm not, thank God for that.
Yeah. I see how you said your best mate kind of forced you to get back into football.
Yeah, she didn't force me, but she asked me.
Was it like, when you came back, was it that decision that you made, alright, I'm going to go back to football? Did you fall back in love with football, or was it as you continued to train and continue to play more games throughout the years, started loving football again?
This is actually kind of a funny story. Well, it's not a funny story, but it's kind of a story anyways. But when, Natalie was on to me and she was asking me, you know, Gemma, you need to come back, you know. And she was playing for Donegal at the time. I think they were only about Division 2 or something. It was more of a load of girls got together and they went out and played on the Saturday, and they went for a gag laugh. It was more
that's
of a drinking team.
That's what got me
team.
Back in yeah. for
just
now.
A bit of camaraderie. Yeah. You know what I mean? And she was
back
like,
to the pub for a pint.
She was like, just come, you know, you'll love it. Just come in, you know. We were still heavily drinking and heavily taking drugs at the time. And, you know, I said to myself, ah, come on, we'll go back for a while. And I kind of half joined back, you know. I half kind of went in and played with Tony Carney. And, yeah, I was turning up every now and again. I'd go out missing for bleeding 4 and 3 and 4 days. And the girls would be like, where's Gemma? And that'd be like, oh, I don't know, she's off in the session, whatever. And did I enjoy it? Yeah, I suppose I kind of enjoyed it. I find a love for it again. No, I was probably just doing it just to get away from another thing yeah. that was probably going on in my yeah. life at the time. And it wasn't until, you know, I actually gave up drinking and taking drugs. I gave up everything the last 4 years ago. And when I done that, when I made that decision, you know, I kind of sat down and spoke to that and I was like, do you know what, I'm actually going to go back, you know, we don't drink around anymore and I'm going to go back and we'll go back to Donnycarney. And I think at this year they'd amalgamated them with Colestor, so it was the Colestor Donnycarney at the time. I'm nearly sure it was that year. And we said, you know, I'm actually going to give football a go, like, you know, yeah. and just go back and see if I can enjoy it, like, again, you know, see if I can find a love for it again. And that year I did. And what happened was we actually got a good few players from Kilmore at the time. So like Laura Chambers, Susan, Trine. And there was a few players that came from Kilmore and they were very good players. And they came into the team and it started to develop like this decent team, you know. And it was great. And we'd all the old girls there still and Jackie Marie and all. It was great crack, you know. It was a good group of girls. And I think we ended up moving up to a major one or something at the time, which was like, I think it was like League of Ireland, the Premier, and then major, something like that was. And we played that league and it was great. It was the first time, like, I was putting on a jersey and being like, jeez, I feel like I'm 16 playing for Stella Maris again, you know. I feel like I'm actually in playing ball. Like, this is brilliant. And what was it? I think it was 29 or 30 at the time. I can't remember exactly. What am I now, 34? I think 29 or 30 I was. And I was like, this is amazing, this is brilliant. And then COVID hit, you know. And I was
good
like,
luck.
Halfway through the season, you know. Yeah. It was a disaster. He's like, jeez, only been getting to me grill. But like, you know, we obviously helped each other through it. We would have, you know, done, as you're saying, we were talking about the 5K runs and I'd have been walking out at home and I got myself an online coach and, you know, we'd done a good bit of weight training through that. And I was still weight training while I was obviously in, I joined Colestor Donnycarney. Yeah. And then the year after then we went into Premier One and, yeah, played with Colestor Donnycarney then again. And what a season. That was a great season.
And did you move straight after that season then?
I think it was after that one, yeah. I'm really sure. So I joined Shells at 32, so I think I'd done 2 years with Colestor Donnycarney and a year with Donnycarney, or it could have been three. Oh, not 100. I'm not good with me dates around. I kind of tried to live in the day, you know.
Take every day as they come.
Look, exactly. It happened. Doesn't matter when it happened.
But it was great.
And was the Colestor team, would that be professional, was it?
No, just amateur. Just some amateur Sunday league. Yeah. On Monday night we used to play. Just amateur, yeah.
Leinster senior league and all that.
Now the Leinster lads playing the Leinster senior, you know, the lads that have a decent side. They play Sunday league, Leinster senior, I think. They're good side.
Good side around the country, isn't there?
Yeah, I've actually got a question. If you don't want to talk about it then, just let me know. You said that you gave up drinking drugs and you were on it heavily. Were you using it as a form of escape from what was going on? Because you talked about how you didn't really respect yourself and you wanted validation from others. Was it a way to like escape from like the pain inside? And did it develop into an addiction as well?
So, I suppose, like, look, I think anybody using any sort of substance, if you want to call it, or exercise can be it as well. If you're using anything excessively, you know, it's becoming some sort of solution to
an escape.
It's becoming a solution to something that's going on internally, you know. And you know, for me, as I said, I was in a long term relationship, and that wasn't kind of going the way we thought it was going to go. And you know, when I left him, and it was very hard, and it was a horrible time, but you know, it was the hardest thing I ever had to do. And I was heavily involved in drinking drugs at that time as well, and obviously I was in a situation that I didn't really want to be in. I had a lot of stuff going on in my life as well, you know, with family and my dad and stuff like that. And I suppose for me, yeah, drinking drugs brought me to a place that, you know, I didn't have to think about stuff like that. You know, it brought me to, I suppose, like being like just away from everything, you know, as you were talking about an escape. It brought me to a place that, you know, I could again walk around as if nothing was going on, as if nothing was happening. And then, you know, when I left the relationship, you know, it became a big problem. It became a massive problem, actually. And yeah, I was, you know, I didn't have anybody there to tell me what to do. I didn't, you know, I didn't have to answer to anybody. You know, when I left that relationship as well, a lot of my friends, I kind of would have distanced myself because we would have had the same group of friends, and I didn't kind of want to be around that, you know. He was obviously heartbroken and stuff, so I had to try and leave that, and we owned the house and all together, so he was still in the house and stuff. And yeah, I'd known to answer that, so I thought that that was my... Yeah, I thought that whole situation, what was my problem inside, but realistically it wasn't, you know, because...
It's deeper than that.
Way deeper, because it continued on for another few years. It got to a stage where it was, it was horrendous. It was absolutely horrendous. It was full on addiction, like alcoholism.
Yeah, when did you realise, oh, we have to stop this now?
I'd say we probably realised a lot longer than when I actually did stop. You know, a few of my friends and stuff were obviously saying to me, like, you know, we don't think you have control over this. And I'm like, I've well controlled over this. You know?
That's the lie you tell yourself, though, isn't it? Yes, it's an addiction. I'm only doing it on a Friday when I go now.
Of course it is. And it's...
Because you'd be thinking an addiction is doing it every day.
Yeah. It's not, and where you're constantly just, I need it. Yeah. It's not.
That's what you think. It's a lot more nuanced than that.
I was the same. Like, the second that point hits, I'm out.
Yeah.
Forget about it.
But the thing about it is, an addiction is obsession. It's not a substance. You know, people think the substance is the problem. It's not. You're the problem. And how you think around it. So it doesn't matter whether you have it or not. If your thinking is all fucked up and wonky, man, you know, you're not living your life. You're not present. You're not here in this moment. And like, I realised, I suppose, maybe a year before I probably went full on, like, needing help. Like, you know what I mean? It would have been a year previous to that where I was like questioning. I'm like, I think I'm fucked here. You know. I think I have a serious problem, and but again, I thought I had all the answers, you know. Like, look, I perceived myself as somebody, and all of my friends would have said this as well, looking at the outside, looking in, they would have looked at me as a person that would have had everything sorted, you know. I would have had everything because, you know, I was in the relationship, we were getting married, we had the house, two jobs, two cars.
Everything was going well.
On the outside. I had, you know,
it's like Instagram, you just see things from the outside. Exactly. You don't see, look, someone could be out in fucking Dubai, smoking, having a ton of his life. Well, you don't know, he could be fucking depressed
deep
down his
depressed,
head.
Yeah,
it's
you
know not, what I mean? It's not.
He could be actually questioning himself and feel like shy, questioning everything.
Yeah. And more so than you think, because they need validation constantly. They keep trying people to tell them that they're doing all right, you know. And you know, for me, it just got to, you know, to a stage like in that year where it was like, I think I'm fucked, you know. And as I said, from the outside looking in, I was always this headstrong person. Well, thought I was, you know. People always see me because I carried that ego so heavy, you know. I carried an ego so heavily and so much that people always thought I was this headstrong person and that it'd never get the better of me, you know.
Yeah.
And obviously me, we didn't want to do that. You know, it was killing me, man. It was absolutely killing me. I was destroying myself internally from the inside out. And I think subconsciously, you know, I've always had a heart. And as I told you, when I went to college in those 3 years, it did open my mind up to, you know, I lived in a Kulak bubble. I lived in a bubble tiny, you know, and I didn't know much. And then when I went to this college, it opened my mind. And I became very open-minded. So I always had that. You know, I always had that. That was always there. I always knew there was more to life. I always knew there was, you know, we didn't have to be the way
just
that
be
we
that
are,
way,
you know, that
way,
kind
that
of way. I always had that. So I think subconsciously something was telling me, you know, you need to go, you need to do something about this.
Yeah.
You need to go and get help. You know what I mean? You need to do something about this. Mm. And it took a couple of rock bottoms.
Yeah.
It took a couple, you know. I've really been terrified, like absolutely terrified.
Was it again, you talked about not showing weakness with Daddy? You just didn't want to show weakness?
Yeah, like...
Because that would go against what people perceive you as.
Exactly, of course. It'd go against, yeah, but it's also, you know, for you, if you want to use the word surrendering to the fact that you don't have all the answers. And I think any person on this world, any person here, like, it's very hard for people to turn around and say, you know, I'm in control of everything, you know. Everybody likes to think they're in control of everything, you know.
Yeah.
And it's so peaceful when you just say, you know what, I don't, and it's grand. Just let it go. You know, it's sort of so peaceful. But, you know, for me, I think that was one of them, definitely. You know, I was terrified of admitting to myself that I'd lost control, you know. I'd lost control completely.
Yeah.
And how's everybody going to see me, and how am I going to come back from this?
Yeah.
I was a shell, you know, a shell of a human, ghost. That's what I kind of like to describe myself as, a pure ghost.
Yeah.
Like, you see through me, like, you know, with nothing left.
Yeah. And going back to becoming teetotal and getting sober, I imagine it wasn't easy. How did you become sober? What were the steps behind it? Did you go to counselling, rehab, AA meetings, that sort of stuff?
Yeah, so a friend of mine, my friend Danielle, God, thank God for her, you know, she got me in touch with her friend, Jay, that brought me into CA, similar to AA, and, you know, he brought me to my first meeting, and I remember going, when he was going, we knew what runners everybody was wearing, you know, because I couldn't lift my head up, couldn't look anybody in the eye, you know, couldn't hold conversation, I was terrified, man. I got to the stage where, you know, I was in a bad way, let's just say that. Like, I don't want to go too much into it. I was in a very, very, very bad way. I remember being in there and looking around. Now, I didn't know what meetings were. I didn't know what any of it meant. You know, I knew one thing, and I was fucked.
Yeah.
I needed help.
And
I knew that, you know.
No choice now, just go.
I need to do something here, you know. And this lad Jay had a very, very similar story to me. You know, everything was similar, and he was about 10 months sober or something at the time, you know, and I was like, well, something's working for him, whatever's working for him. Now, we'd never met this lad until I went to this meeting, you know what I mean? And I remember being met with a big hug and him saying to me, you know, you don't have to live like that. And me being like, this is madness, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But my head was so fucking loud at the time. It was just manic, like, I was doing everything just to get there and see if we could hear something. But I remember going into the room, and I was expecting more so, like, professional drug counsellors.
And it's not just regular blokes.
There's a lot of addicts, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I was like, this is breaking great.
Yeah.
But again, couldn't lift my head, couldn't speak to anybody. Remembering taking one thing from it, and it was everybody sitting there, nobody had any substance in them. Well, except for the ones that were struggling, at the time. They were all having a conversation. They were all looking at one another in the eye.
Yeah.
They all could speak. They were laughing. Jesus, man, I hadn't laughed from the inside in, I don't know, three or four years.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It was all fake. Everything, my whole last 4 years was fucking fake, you know, and I was just in a session and just trying to be a part of something.
Yeah.
And these were sitting having real conversations. And that struck me, you know. I was like, Jesus Christ. So we just kept coming back.
Yeah.
First few months were hard, you know, white knuckling and everything. You know, just getting there, I suppose, just the way of life, you know, learning and hearing from the people that went before me. And just taking clear cut a little bit of direction.
Yeah.
And as it goes on, you know, it gets a little bit easier. I'm not going to go right into what the program consists of. Some people would get a little bit afraid of, I suppose, if you want to talk about higher powers or whatever the case may be, I won't go into that. But all I'll say is there was people there that could lead me in a direction, you know, and I need this calmness about them.
It happens, the leading direction, that happens so much, especially in the areas like yourself from out by Darndale. I'm from Summit Hill.
Right.
So that culture for going into drugs and drink at young ages and being around all these people, you feel, oh, these all love me. They don't give a fuck about you. You wake up in the morning and you're feeling depressed. You try ring one of them.
Nah.
You get an answer? No chance, you know what I mean?
But it's, you know, for you know, everybody walks around this world self-centered, selfishly. You know, people don't understand how, you know, if I say to somebody like, "Hey, you're really selfish." No, I'm not selfish. I'd always give me last roll out to somebody or something. It's like, selfishness isn't that. Selfishness is walking around 99% of the time constantly thinking about, is someone thinking of me?
Constantly in your
own self, like, that's what selfishness is.
Yeah.
Selfishness isn't the matter of taking the last blatant can of coke.
Being mean or greedy.
Yes.
No,
selfishness is constantly being thinking about yourself. Yeah. Wanting around and saying, like, you know, am I, you know, like walking into a room, for instance, a lot of people walk into a room and never, like, what are they looking at? What are they thinking of me?
Yeah.
Realistically, no one cares because they'll probably be thinking about themselves.
What's he thinking of me?
That's what it is.
Yeah.
So we had to learn, you know. And I took direction from that when I, you know, went into these meetings. And I had to learn that's what I suffer with. I suffer with selfishness, self-centeredness. And I can't accept who I am, you know. I can't accept. And I need to learn how to be me. And I need to learn how to stop chasing stuff on the outside. Why am I chasing? Why am I looking for people to approve? Why am I looking for people's approval? You know, why am I wanting to be a part of something that I don't even want to be a part of just for somebody else's approval? You know? We had a massive problem with people pleasing, and I really understood that, you know, go to meetings. I really did. And I got to meet some fantastic people, you know, really, really good people that will do anything for you. And what you were, Russ, what you were talking about there about your old friends, let's say, and you'd ring them. And not a chance would you get an answer out of them. I'd ring anybody in the fellowship that I'm in and straight away. And even if it's not them, it's like if they can't answer, somebody else, like, without a doubt, they'd take the skin off the back to help you.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the great thing about it, is you go in and it's weird because I grew up with everybody having an agenda. Everybody has it, like, you know. Everybody has an agenda, and you know, I'm going in here and people are wanting to help me. I'm like, what the fuck are they looking for, you know? What are they looking for?
Yeah, yeah.
And it's
We're so used to that, so though. People are only around you because you can offer something, isn't
it? It's ingrained in you.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It's ingrained in you. And the worst part about it is it's ingrained so hard in you that you're walking around like that.
Yeah.
And you're saying, what can I get out of people?
Yeah.
Do you know? And until you understand to kind of get that trait and let that go, you know, you'll always think somebody or the world owes you something.
Yeah.
Unfortunately,
nobody owes you fuck off.
You're not that important.
No.
There's so much many more important things out there.
Yeah.
There's so many more important things. And when I come to realise that to help somebody or you know, to just to hold the door open for somebody becomes more important than walking into a room and thinking, what runners have I got on?
Yeah.
You know, when you switch that mindset, life becomes so much better.
Yeah.
But I couldn't have got there. I could have never learned what I've learned today about myself and grown the last 4 years if I hadn't put myself in that hole.
Yeah.
That's being totally honest with you.
Yeah.
People have often asked me, you know, was it like if you could change, like if you could go back, would you? And I'm telling them, no, I definitely wouldn't. I wouldn't change it.
I'm just saying, when I hit rock bottom, that sprung me to do all the things I've done since then.
Yeah.
That's the main focus. I will never, ever, ever, ever let myself get back to this situation. And that's what springs the mindset and the motivation to go on. Don't let yourself go back there.
Yeah.
You can't.
Yeah, and I would always say, would I change? Absolutely not.
No.
It's given me a way of thinking now, you know. I have this way of thinking now that, and I have the tools and I have a great support network around me. And to be honest, the best thing we've got is peace of mind.
Yeah.
It's the best thing I've got.
You wouldn't have found yourself had you not hit rock bottom that.
Absolutely not. I'd still be going around wanting to, you know, having this FOMO, fairness now, wanting to bleed and be there and over there and not being able to sit still and, you know, wanting the peace of fucking everything.
Yeah.
You know, and just being able to sit with yourself.
Yeah.
Like, the magic in that. Imagine that. Being able to sit down.
Just sit down on your own and not have to be thinking of all sorts of just peace.
Greatest gift I was given was that, you know, and yeah, if anybody's, you know, just don't think about it. You don't have to do what society tells you to do.
No.
Or I'm not even saying society, you know, just we'd say to anybody, like, just reach in and ask yourself, like, ask yourself the question, you know, is this the life you really want to live? Because it's nobody else's fault. It isn't.
No, it's all
you.
As
you said, society will have a part to play in it. Of course. Your childhood trauma, all of that stuff will have a part to play in it. It does have a part. But you have to take responsibility for yourself.
Of course, yeah.
You have to hold your two hands up.
How are you going to change?
No, exactly.
It all comes from within. You can't change until you want to change. You know what I mean? I see it so much even with friends like that I grew up with. None of them want to change.
No.
I try to say something towards them drinking and I'm the bad person.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Because I'm one out of, say, six that's not doing those things anymore.
I think, you know, another thing for me is just mind your own business.
Yeah.
Leave them to it.
Yeah.
That's what I do now, you know. Just
can't help someone that doesn't want to be helped.
No, look.
It's their own lives. We got your own. Just stick to your own lives.
Yeah. Stick to your own lane. You know, it's as simple as that. Stick to your own lane and I'd never go around there. Preaching that, but I would always, I think when you kind of start to develop a little bit of self-awareness and, you know, you start to understand that being in the moment and being, like, I suppose, a peaceful kind of person, you do see things in people, you know, you see edginess and you'll see someone that's having a hard time and you can throw in a gesture here or there and just let them know, you know, you'll always be there.
Yeah.
Like, because everybody deserves help. It doesn't matter how bad they've gone or whatever. Everybody deserves a second chance.
100%.
You know? And no one's a hopeless case.
Yeah.
Nobody.
And it's us that have been through that can help. You know
Absolutely,
what I mean?
Like, 100%.
People are constantly complaining, like, the counsellor hasn't helped, but it's the people that have lived that life that can help them the most. You know what I mean? Because you understand where, like, counselling, I'm not putting a bad thing towards counselling around, it's just different people, but we've lived that, we've been through that. So we understand how dark and deep that can go and how to come out, you know what I mean? Like yourself going to the meetings, that can help so many people that has an addiction.
Yeah, I think as well, it's, you know, for me, when I sat in those, you know, for the first few months, it was terrifying, you know, but it was always people telling stories and they'd say something, I'd be like, oh, wait, that's me. We do that. Oh, man. Fuck. We're in the right place.
We're all the same.
Yeah, we're all the same. I'm not that special fucking person.
It goes back to that.
I'm the worst. I'm in the bits. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's not like. It's
when you're open your perspective on things, that's when you get the most benefit from.
Yeah.
And speaking about help, of course, like, the people who've been where you've been, it helps a lot because of relatability. But the most important thing is help yourself.
Yeah. You have to want it. That's what I go back to. When I hear rock bottom, I can't live like this. I'm either going to be gone or I need to change a lot of things.
Mm.
And things needed to change. Mm. But it comes from there, you know what I mean? You have to want this so bad. Is this the life you want to live into your 30s, 40s? Mm. God forbid you don't see, I believe, 50s, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
No, but that's the way it can go.
It's not living.
No.
It's existing.
Yeah.
It's a fucking misery, man. That's all
Friday
it is.
Friday to Friday. Just wait for Friday. Wait for Friday. I've been there. Wait till Friday. Wait Friday. Wait Friday. Can't wait Friday. And that's all you think about for 4 days.
No worries. It's in our debt.
Yeah. Like, pretty much your soul is dead, but you're just there. Like you said earlier, you're a ghost.
You're there, but you're not there. You know what I mean? But anyway, I think we've had enough of this. We've done a deep episode last one, now we're getting into the deep shit again. I want to talk about Noel King, because I know he was your manager at Stella Maris. He was your manager at Shells until he left recently. What was his impact on you as a footballer and a person?
Yeah, well, obviously Noel would have played a massive part in, you know, telling me that women can actually play football. You know, that was the biggest thing. I think years ago, I think he would have got in contact with me ma and said, like, bring her up, you know, that kind of way. And then obviously he had all these other girls playing at Stella Maris, you know, and he had massive CV in behind him. Now, at the time, I didn't know who he was. We don't know, to be honest, we don't really know anybody in football. But, you know, we had a lot of knowledge, and he had all these girls, a couple of them coming from the Wicklow Academy, the likes of Anya and Susan, and there was a couple of them coming in. And, you know, it was a new scene for me. You know, I was like, this is bleeding amazing. This is great. And we don't know whether at the time he'd managed the Women's Ireland and then came back to Stella Maris. So we had that. I don't know whether he'd done or else he'd went and came back to us, something like that. I can't remember whether it was either or. But he had that, obviously, that CV. So for me, it was like, girls can actually go somewhere.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Girls can actually go and play football somewhere. So it was very important, you know. Like if we hadn't met now, I don't think
I don't know if you'd even be
I don't
playing.
Know, we probably would have went to Columbus and stopped after 14. Do you know what I mean? And then obviously would have never played League of Ireland. Because then they've done a full fucking thing and come back around again. It was like
Champions League football as
yeah.
well.
Yeah, I was gonna say
what
that.
What the fuck, like, where did that come from? Yeah. Do you know? Where did that come yeah. from? So yeah, that impact, you know, for me is massive. Like, look, when I went back playing football, I didn't have any expectations.
You're just doing it for
way.
The fun of it.
We didn't have any expectations.
Or the social side of it.
And all of a sudden, I get a phone call. Well, I'm very good friends with Noah Stewart and Niamh, you know, and Niamh texts me and she was like, do you know what, actually, I'm going to bring it back to even further because it wasn't. I was walking through St. Anne's Park and my dog with me and I actually ran into Derek Cook. He was the old Raheny manager back in the day. So he would have had the Raheny girls instead of Marriott girls would have had a big rival. Like,
mm-hmm.
you know, they had a great team as well, you know. The likes of Pearl and I would have played for Raheny. I think she played at Temple Og actually when I was playing instead of Marriott. But they all would have eventually went to Raheny and then Raheny eventually would have merged into Shelbourne as we see it today, which yeah. it's mad, like. But I was on to the park and I met Derek and he's like, ah, how are you, Gemma? It's like, Derek, he's like, I haven't seen you in years. I was like, how are you getting on? And he says to me, I heard you're back playing football. He says, yeah, Derek. I said, I tell you what, I'm loving it, you know. I said, I'm absolutely, the last 2 years have been fucking great, you know. And he says to me, yeah, I heard you're banging the goals in.
Yeah.
I was like, I wouldn't say that. Now, at the time, I was carrying a bit of a hamstring injury. I tore my hamstring, went into nerve damage. So I was playing with like two bandages on my leg. My leg wasn't even straight, like, you know. I says to him, yeah, it's great, it's fantastic. And he says to me, well, I heard Noel King's looking for you. Well, he's like, what? No. And he was like, no, I think he is looking for you. And I said, Noel King, manager of Shelbourne and all. And he was like, yeah. And I was like, no. Anyways, a few weeks went on and I get a text off Niamh. And he was like, listen, Gemma, my dad's looking for your number. Is there any chance you want to take a phone call? Like, yeah, walk away, give him the number there. And I got a phone call then off Noel. And he was like, would you be interested in the League of Ireland? Like, do you know anything about it? I says, no, nothing about it. So they know Shelbourne.
You know the name of the team.
That would be this club in Ireland, you say that.
Yeah. But we didn't know, lads. Like, yeah, look, come here, I've heard of the teams.
Of course,
and
yeah, we didn't
and
understand
stuff.
That.
But, and I knew the girls had played in it, you know, and Stephanie and Anya played for P. Melton. But he didn't know anything else, like, knew nothing about it, you know. And he says to me, would you be interested in coming training? And I was like, no. He says, I don't think you understand. He says, I've been playing football for 10 years. I said, the ball will be lame. Like, my touch won't be anywhere near what there is. And he says to me, well, come on, training. So off I went. I rang my old manager, actually, and I says to Tom, what do you think? And he says, Jimmy, you have to go. Like, so I said, right, come on then. So I went up. And that's when I say, oh my God, when I say the standard, I was like, what the fuck am I doing here?
Those levels to this.
I was like, this is next level.
Yeah.
We can't do this. Like, I was like, no. And I remember.
Compared to them, you are like me.
Yeah, what you were saying earlier. Yeah. Oh, it's like a pinball. Your ball bouncing on me, you know?
Yeah.
But, like, for me, it was the younger girls that, you know, I was like, this is unbelievable.
Yeah.
Where is women's football gone? Like, where have all these players come from?
Yeah.
You know? Because that was non-existent when I was growing up.
Yeah.
You know? Non-existent. I was like, this is unbelievable. The talent was just... Look at the Jesse and Abby Lark and Leo Leary and all were there. And girls are 15. Like, I was like, we could be your man. Like,
yeah.
Mental. You know? And then obviously, you know, we'd Rach, Noel, Perlo. And when I got the training, you know, Rachel actually sat beside me and she said, Gemma, we don't know whether you remember me. And Rachel said, yeah, of course I do, Rachel, because we would have played against each other when we were kids, you know. She was like, yeah, who's all coming up? And I was like, oh, I don't know, we'll see what happens. So the training session went on and it was a bleeding disaster. It was an absolute disaster. Oh, he was chasing shadows, lad, so he was gassed, blown. Oh, fuck, what? And like, but I said to myself at the end of it, right, these sprints. And I remember sitting to myself and saying, right, I'm fast, you know, I'm fast. That's probably the only thing I have. And I said to them, I said, me bollocks, I'm not letting any of these win a race. Yeah. Shall we gas myself for you doing the sprints at the end? And I played, and I go, give us socks, give us socks. And we done a few of them. And then I remember Jess Garden coming up and being like, you know, you don't, like, because I kept saying I'm not fit, you know, and she was like, Jeez, you don't look fit. And I was like, that. Yeah. I couldn't even breathe. I couldn't even answer her. I couldn't answer her. I was like, oh, lads. And then I spoke to Noel after, you know, and he says to me, I said, no. And he says, why not? Like, he says, give it a few weeks. He says, I'm telling you, I think you've something there. You know, and I was like, oh, no.
Yeah.
I couldn't even move after that training session. Hips, legs. Gone. And then I'm training, like, you know, I trained for class of the I was weight training, like, constantly. I was just like, gone I was. Yeah. And, you know, he says to me, just give it a few weeks, like, you know, I think we want to sign you and stuff. And I was like, yeah. Like, I don't know about
that's
this.
That's all
like,
it takes, isn't it? One person believing you.
Yeah.
And show so, you have something.
You know,
something.
he gave me that opportunity. We end up, he says, look, we have a game against Northern Ireland, pre-season friendly on Sunday. I'll give you half an hour. I said, fuck it. What have I got to lose? Look, we don't give a fuck. Mary, we'd done a lot of personal growth at that stage. You know,
we wouldn't
even bat an eyelid of thinking what others had thought. Or it was all about me, and no one would have, like altered my decision or anything. You know, we would have set. I sat down with myself, and I spoke with my old manager Tomo. You know, we went a little bit back and forward, and I made the decision for myself, and I said, "Fuck it, there's nothing to lose here."
Yeah. Take the opportunity,
see what happens.
Yeah,
let's see what happens, you know.
You only live once.
And, you know, with all the girls, like, Champions League football, I was like, oh. I got to deal with it, you know. Oh, it's gas, it's funny, you know. But, so that was, you know, that's the impact he's had for me. You know, it's only good, like. But yeah, it's been fantastic since we've signed, you know.
Yeah.
I remember going up and playing against Northern Ireland as well. Oh, half an hour.
Disaster.
Back and I didn't understand the press or anything.
Tactics side of it rather than the physical.
Running around like a bleeding Muppet chase. We did win a penalty.
Yeah.
Yeah, we did win a penalty.
Did they convert?
Yeah, they did. It was Happy Larry on the bus.
That was all me.
Happy Larry, yes. Yeah. that's where the Shells thing started.
Yeah.
That's where it all started, you know. Yeah.
Crazy where you came from, crazy where you are now, do you know what I mean?
Madness.
It's crazy, literally. Yeah. It's madness, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Speaking about women's football now, we've seen women's football when you were growing up. Like, no one really cared about the women. They were getting mistreated. They weren't getting the care that the lads are getting, do you know what I mean? And now when you look at women's football, like, right, you see footballers from Ireland going to England, right? Look at the women's team, right? Jessie Stapleton's gone to West Ham. Jessie has gone West Ham. Tara Hanlon won the League of Payment. I know, I shouldn't talk about this now. She's got the fucking City now.
Absolutely. Amazing.
And then, I'm not trying to disrespect the men's teams, you know what I mean? But you look at the players going to England. Like, Dan O'Manji went from Rovers, unbelievable team, to fucking Lincoln. I think Jackie Moylan done the same thing. They went to Lincoln. League One teams. Mm. But the guys are going to, like, the Super League, for those who don't know, is like the women's version of the Premier League. Mm. The best of the best.
I know the manager of Paymount, and he's losing a lot of his girls to England. Yeah. And big sides, not just like small clubs, but the biggest
the big
sides in the
like
women's Super League.
Like,
top, brilliant.
Top clubs, world class players.
Yeah.
Look at Katie as well, Katie McCabe. She's gone from Chelsea to fucking Arsenal. Mm. Probably the best women's team in the world right now.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Like,
one of the best players in the world as well.
Oh, she's talented, more talented than a lot of blokes.
Yeah, put her in that. Look, put Katie on her own against an entire country. Compared to where men's team, like, Katie could do a better job on her
but
own.
Even going off Katie, what you were saying about the women's game and how it's mistreated and all, Katie McCabe, when she was going to take a corner, did you see a man taking pictures of her and all? Did you see that?
No, I didn't see
some bloke in the corner of the game taking pictures of Katie as she was putting the ball on the corners, but like pictures, photos for himself, you know what I mean?
No,
she was bending over, like, come on. Like, but that can turn women off that as well, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, but you're going to always have that, aren't you? Yeah. You're always going to have people that are bleeding, you know?
Like you said earlier, there's always going to be people like that, so...
Yeah, but anyway,
just leave them to it,
before
yeah?
Before we wrap this up, where do you see women's football going in Ireland? Do you think it will be bigger than men's football?
I suppose... like, look, it's only on the way up. It really, really is. I think even our league this year is has got a lot of news and got a lot of reports and stuff like that around it. We think people are going to be very, very interested. As in comparison to men's football, like, who knows? Probably could be, you know, probably could be. Look, I'd love to even see the men's league of Ireland grow a little bit as well.
Yeah,
you know,
that's an need.
I think all football in Ireland, not just men or women's football. I think it needs a projection of investors to come in and do something big, you know. Because
it's been going on for years.
Yeah,
I was saying it years now. We're not a big fan of League of Ireland, but for that reason, like, it's not big. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's not really broadcasted all over the place. Like, you don't really see it much. You know what I mean?
But I think you know. I think women's football in Ireland is only going to grow. I really do believe
definitely.
That. And the talent we're producing now, the likes of 20 years' time, you're going to see, like, world-class players all the time coming through.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
We'll leave it on there.
We'll leave it there.
Thanks very much, Seamus, for coming in.
Nice one for coming in here. And yeah,
appreciate it.
Enjoy, guys. See you later.
Tell the world and send me, I'd be here because me want freedom, want freedom. Tell the world and send me, want freedom, come, want freedom, want freedom. Tell the world and send me.